We are discussing about Kaliya Daha, and behind Kaliya Daha is the Bhajan Kutir of a very important devotee, Prabodhananda Saraswati, who is the uncle of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Of course, he was the brother of the father of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. He was a brother of Venkata, and he was a Sri Vaishnava, but by the association of Lord Chaitanya and Sri Rangam, he was converted to Gaudiya Vaishnavism and became a great Gaudiya Vaishnavacharya and wrote books about Lord Chaitanya and also about Krishna. And probably you've heard of, there's a book, maybe it's in Russian, I don't know, Vrindavan Mahimamrita?
Yes.
Oh. Vrindavan Mahimamrita is by Prabhudananda Saraswati. And he wrote, I don't know if this is in Russian, it's called Navadvip Sataka. It's about the glories of Navadvip. He also wrote, do they have that in Russian? No. So he was, if you read in Vrindavan the Mahimamrita, you can see how intense, he was a very intense devotee of the Lord. And they say that in Krishna Leela, at least some acharyas, they say in Krishna Leela is Tunga Vidya Sakhi. One of his most famous works, besides Vrindavan Mahimamrita, which you're familiar with, because in Vrindavan Mahimamrita, he's very, in one sense, fanatically, he's a fanatic lover of Vrindavan and a fanatic lover of Radha and Krishna. In one verse in Vrindavan Mahimamrita, Prabhupada Saraswati Pad, he's telling, he says, if your tongue is telling you that you should leave Vrindavan, then you should cut out your tongue. And if your legs are telling you to walk out of Vrindavan, you should break your legs. And if your head is thinking that maybe I should leave Vrindavan, then you should crack your head against a rock. But if your guru orders you to leave Vrindavan, you should get on the next plane. Sri Gurudev ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. So, as far as the devotees that are treading the path of Raghunuga Sarana Bhakti, the most important book for them is by Prabhudananda Saraswati, one of the most important. It's called Radha Ras Sudha Nidhi. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in his biography, it's told that this was one of his favorite books. This book, Radharas Sudhanidhi, was a favorite book of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and in one particular shloka was very favorite. And in his biography, his disciple is recounting that whenever his Gurudev, whenever Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would recite this particular verse from Radharas Sudhanidhi, then his voice would choke up, and then tears would start dropping from his eyes when he would speak this verse. So in this verse, this is the speaker of this verse is the author, Prabodhananda Saraswati, and he's saying, I offer my obeisances in the direction of the slightest breeze coming from the stirring of the dress of Vrishabhanu Nandini. In other words, Vrishabhanu Nandini, Radharani is standing at some distance, and this person, Prabhupada Saraswati, in their Sakhi form, they're standing some distance away. The wind is blowing, and the wind is blowing past Radharani, and then moving her dress. That wind is moving her dress, and then it's passing by Radharani, and then he's smelling that fragrance. So he's offering, Prabhupada Saraswati, he's offering obeisances to that direction in which that breeze is coming, carrying the fragrance of Radharani's divine transcendental body. And then he's explaining what is the second half of the verse, he's explaining what is the effect of that breeze on Krishna. And he's saying that when that breeze coming from Radharani's dress touches Krishna, he becomes completely overwhelmed with love for Radha. So Bhaktisiddhanta, he would become overwhelmed when hearing this verse, which basically in this verse the glorious position of Srimati Radharani is being proclaimed loud and clear. So everyone should take an opportunity to visit that Kaliya Daha, visit there, and you can go inside and you can go and touch that Kadamba tree. We saw the first in the morning, the big, big Kadamba tree, the branch or some wall around it. They're going to make some water there and make like a little Kaliya Ghat. So the next place, as we walked on the Prikamarg, we came to Madan, the big red temple, Madan Mohan, which was opened in 1580. And that's on top of the hill, and Sanatan Goswami's Bhajan Kutir is there, and then below is the Samadhi of Sanatan Goswami. So this is actually a place of pastimes for Krishna. So that particular hill is called Dwadas Aditya Tila. Tila means small hill. Dwadas means, like we say, Dwadasi. It means 12. And Aditya is one of the names for the sun. So there's 12 different names. And actually, in different universes, there's 12 different sun planets. And those names of the sun are like Aditya, Prabhakar, Mitra, Vivishwan, Surya, Arka, Divikar. These are all different names for the sun. So one day, Krishna and the cowherd boys came here to Kaliya, to this area of Kaliya, Ghat. And Sridhama, the elder brother of Srimati Radharani, he came with one ball. And he had this brand new ball, he was holding on to it. And then the other cowherd boys, they gathered around and said, "Come on, Sridhama, let's play ball." He said, "No, I this is a brand new ball, and I'll play ball with you. You can use my ball to play, but you have to promise me that if it gets lost, you'll replace the ball." So they were throwing the ball, and then Krishna got the ball, and then he threw it into the Yamuna. And then Sridham got very, very angry. "You threw my ball in the Yamuna. Now you lost my ball." And Sridham grabbed Krishna, was holding him, and he's very powerful. He wouldn't let him go. He just clutched him like this. And so then Krishna, he was being held in the clutches of Sridham. And then Sridham said, "Listen, you have to promise me you'll get me a new ball." And Krishna says, "Yeah, I promise you." And then Sridham said, "I don't believe you." And then Krishna, because he wanted to get free from it, he bit Sridham's hand. He went, and then Sridham let him go. And then Krishna said, "Listen, I'll jump in the Yamuna and get your ball. I'm not going to buy you a new one." So Krishna dove in and went after the ball. So as Krishna was, he was going downstream, he was going down the Yamuna, because this was at Kaliya Daha. He jumped in the water there, and he got the ball, and he came downstream. When he came down, it came down by Madan Mohan, because first there's Kaliya Daha, then as we walked. So when he got out of the Yamuna, this is winter time, and Yamuna is very, very cold. And Krishna's feeling very, very cold. He's, oh, and there was one hillock there, that Dwadas Aditya Tila. It's there, and Krishna was on the shady side. The sun was rising. So he was on the shade side of the mountain. It was very, very cold. And then, so then he looked, and Krishna looked on top of the Tila, and he saw the sun was shining up there. He said, "Oh, if I run up this mountain, I can get bathed in the full, brilliant sunshine at the top of the mountain." So when Krishna ran up to the top of the mountain, he didn't find one sun, but he found 12 sun planets. 12 sun planets came from different universes. Aditya and Arka and Mitra and Surya and Vivishwan and Divakar, they all came there and surrounded him and just started like heat lamps. You know, you go in a sauna or something like that, and there's all heat lamps around him. And he warmed up so much that he started perspiring. And his perspiration, Krishna's perspiration, went down the hill and formed a ghat there. There's one of the ghats you see in your book. It's called Prakshananda. So some Prakshananda ghat, which Prakshananda, something like this. It means the blissful perspiration. The ghat which is made from the blissful perspiration is called Prakshananda. So this is the end of how the pastime concludes. Sanatana Goswami was living here in this on top of this hill doing his bhajan, and it was a very lonely place. So every day he was walking to Mathura and doing madhukari and collecting some rotis from the houses of different Brahmins. So one day he went to the house of Purushottam Chobe, one particular Brahmin, and he went into the house to have darshan of their deity. They had a deity of Gopal. So when he went in the house and to take darshan, he said, "Hey, where's Gopal? Where's your Thakurji? Where's your deity?" And very nonchalantly and casually, the Brahmani, the wife of Purushottam Chobe, she said, "Oh, Gopal, oh yeah, oh, he's not on the altar right now. He's in the backyard playing with my son." So the two boys, I mean, the deity was called Madan. So the son of Chobe, they were playing a game. The deity, I mean, Madan, the deity, and his son, the two boys, they were playing a game. Whoever loses the game, then the loser has to carry the winner on his shoulder. So the first game they played, then the Brahmin boy, he lost, and he had to carry Madan on his shoulder. So he was carrying him, running around like horsey, you know, running around the backyard like playing a horsey thing. And so Sanatana Goswami came once and he saw this. And then the next game they played, and then Chobe's son, he won. Then Madan put him on his shoulders. And then he started running, and then he saw Sanatana, and then Madan ran and went back in the temple and became the deity. So Chobe's son, when he was thrown off the shoulders of Madan, and Madan ran to the temple, and Chobe's son was chasing after him, he said, "Hey, what are you doing? You can't get away with that. Hey, look, we'll see tomorrow. When we play tomorrow, you'll see what happens to you." Needless to say, Sanatana Goswami was thoroughly astounded. And we are too, to hear this. So Sanatana came the next day to this very interesting house to take darshan of this very interesting deity. So he came and he saw that Mr. Chobe, Pandit Chobe's wife, she had not even bathed or put on fresh cloth. She was wearing her, as they say, night suit, and she had no tilak or anything, and she was cooking khichdi for her son and Madan, who were sitting there on the floor waiting for breakfast. Because she hadn't bathed, so before you bathe, you usually brush your teeth. So she had a datun. A datun means a neem tree twig. She had a piece of tree, you know, a twig, like this. And she was chewing it, as you see these people, they're brushing their teeth with a neem twig. And then that was one end of it, and the other end she was stirring the khichdi. So then she put two bowls down, one in front of her son, and then his playmate Madan. But when she put the khichdi in the bowls, it was very, very hot. So to cool it, she picked up the bowls and went, and she blew on the bowls. And of course, a lot of saliva and stuff goes in there too. And Madan and the boy are just sitting there, yes, yes. And then it got nice and cool, and the boys could eat it comfortably. This is Krishna's Leela. This is Thakurji's Leela with his pure devotee Sanatana, and what to speak of is his boyfriend, his Pandit's son. So it's not to be imitated or anything we hear. And after the boys enjoyed this special khichdi, then they went out and played. And then after they went out in the backyard, then Sanatana Goswami approached this Brahmani lady, and she said, "Mataji, it's really not quite proper to cook for your deity without taking a bath and stirring the khichdi with your toothbrush." So the Mataji was like old-fashioned type Mataji, so she was very submissive. So she said, "Yes, Baba, yes, 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 Baba. Yes, tomorrow before I cook for the boys, I will bathe first, and I won't use my toothbrush." So Sanatana returned for the third day to see the extraordinary pastimes. And now he went to the kitchen, and what he found was that the two boys were sitting on the ground, Madan, and they were crying very loudly, and they're crying, "Food, food, food," because their mother was busy bathing. And the boys are very impatient, and they were being delayed because she was taking a bath, and then she just started cooking. They were already sitting there, and they're very impatient. So they went, while she was cooking, they were pulling her dress. Madan, the deity, and his friend, the Pandit's son, "Mommy, mommy, mata, mata, khichdi, khichdi, come on, hurry up." So when Sanatana Goswami saw this amazing scene, then he approached that Brahmani. He said, "Oh, Mata, it seems that the boys are very unhappy. If Madan is satisfied with your cooking without bathing, then okay, continue that way. I think I've committed a great offense at your feet by trying to instruct you. Now the boys are crying. Please forgive me and cook as you did, exactly as you did before. And that way you can please Madan and your son." So the next day, back to the toothbrush. When Sanatana Goswami was leaving that house of Purushottam Chobe, then Madan started following him. He said, "Hey, Baba, Baba," and he started pulling on his dress. "Please, Baba, oh, Baba, please take me to Vrindavan. Take me to Vrindavan with you. I want to go to Vrindavan." Then Sanatana replied. He said, "Oh, listen, Madan. I'm a Niskinchan sadhu. I don't have anything. How can I feed you? How can I take care of you?" But Madan insisted. He said, listen, I'll walk behind you, but don't look around until you get to your bhajan kutir. So Sanatan Goswami returned to Vrindavan from Mathura, from his Madhukari, begging. And Madan was walking behind him. He could hear his ankle bells, and sometimes he was singing some little tune to himself. And when he walked up, Sanatan Goswami walked up to the top of the mountain to return to his bhajan kutir. Then, because he didn't look back the whole way, then he stopped and he turned around to see Madan. And Madan turned into the deity. So now, Sanatan Goswami would serve as deity. So he would bake some wheat flour. Because sometimes on Madhukari you can bake pakabog or kacha. Kacha means uncooked. You can bake some flour, then make your own rotis, or you can bake already cooked rotis. So he baked some atta. And then he got atta, then he came and he came back, he collected some Yamuna water, and then he rolled the atta into little balls. A little ball. And then he got some dried leaves and he made a fire, and when there's some ashes and cinders there, then he threw the balls in a fire, like an oven. And then he cooked. And so then they were covered with ashes. The little balls were covered with ashes and some dirt and this and that. And then he would offer those every day, put a tulsi leaf and offer those with love and devotion to Madan Mohan. So it's not exactly chapan bhog. Madan Mohan tolerated for some time, and then one day he spoke to Sanatan Goswami. He said, hey, Baba, I mean, enough is enough. So then he said, little bit of salt, please, just tore us up. So then Krishna realized that he couldn't really depend so much on Baba to get any salt. So he made arrangements himself to get his own salt. So lo and behold, coming from North India, coming down the Jamuna, there was a huge boat full of salt, owned by Mr. Kapoor. So the boat was going very nicely down the Jamuna. Then as soon as it came opposite Dwadasaditya Tila, where the deity of Madan Mohan, it suddenly, there was a sandbar, some low water, and the boat just stuck on the sand and they couldn't move it. Mr. Kapoor was perplexed what to do with this load of cargo which he was taking to Agra to sell in the market. In those days, 500 years ago, salt was very rare and very costly. So he asked some local people if they could help pull the boat, and they had no answer or solution. So they suggested there's some Siddha Baba, some Madhukari Baba up on the top of the hill, and you can meet with him. Maybe he can give you some blessings, or he has mystic power. He can make your boat move out. Sanatan Goswami was approached by the merchant, the business person, and he said, can you help me? He said, what can I do? I have no power, but you can pray to Madan Mohan. See, he's sitting here in the branch of this tree. This is where I keep him. He's sitting on the branch of this tree, and I do my puja there. And you pray to him, he can do anything. And maybe by his mercy, then your boat will become free. And he did that, and his boat became free, and he felt indebted. So Mr. Kapoor came back and built this temple. So this deity of Madan Mohan was, of course, the deity now is in Karoli in Rajasthan. But the deity is very, very ancient. It was actually carved by Krishna's great-grandson, Bajranab. I mean, he arranged to have it carved. He didn't carve it. He was a king, but he arranged to have it carved. He installed it. He had it carved, the deity of Madan Mohan, Govindaji, Gopinath, Haridev in Govardhan, Keshavaji in Mathura, and Dauji in Mahavan, and Gopishwar and Kameshwar and Nandishwar, different ancient deities he arranged to have them installed. Now, Uttara, so when Bajranab was having these deities carved, then he called Uttara, because Uttara was quite old at the time, and she actually had seen Krishna eye to eye, and Bajranab had not seen. She knew very exactly what Krishna looked like. So then, when these deities, Madan Mohan, Govindji, and Gopinath, were carved, then Bajranab, he asked Uttara, can you tell me which of these deities looks like Krishna most? So she said, Gopinath is perfect from the waist to the chest. Madan Mohan is perfectly looks like Krishna from the feet to the waist. Uttara, because the deities were covered with cloth, because they weren't installed. So they were carved, but they weren't installed. So they were covered. So when when they uncovered the deity of Govindaji for her to look at, and when she saw Govindaji, Uttara, she covered her face because she felt shy. And a married woman, she should never look in the face of another man, even though it's Krishna. When she saw Govinda, she's, oh, he's so his face is so beautiful. Exactly, I feel like I'm looking right at Krishna. And that's why she covered her face, and she explained like that. Next place we saw was Imlitala. Imlitala was all kinds of new construction, big gate, and there was five big domes there. And Imlitala is the tamarind tree. This is the place where Lord Chaitanya would come every day and chant his japa from Akuragat. So during Dwapara Yuga, when Krishna was having his Leela here, it's explained that during the Rasa dance, once Radharani left the Rasa dance, left Krishna alone, and Krishna was searching all over the banks of the Yamuna looking for his beloved Radhika. He couldn't find Radharani anywhere, so he came to this particular tree, this Imlitala, this tamarind tree. He sat under this tree, and feeling great pangs of separation, Krishna started chanting Radha Nam. He's like when we're always taking shelter of the name. So when we're in difficulty or not in difficulty, anytime, we're always taking shelter of Krishna's name. So in the same way, Lord Krishna, he took shelter of Radharani's name, feeling separation from her, because he was not able to find her. So he's chanting Radhe, 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 like this. That was his japa. As he continued to chant the holy name of Radhika, or Radhe, and then he was meditating on Radharani's wonderful qualities and attributes, then all the feelings and sentiments of Radharani's heart started to flood Krishna's heart. And then Krishna started to experience Radharani's mood of separation from himself. While Krishna was absorbed in glorifying Radharani's name and meditating on her qualities, her form and qualities, then what happened in his dark sham form, his dark blue form, started to, it actually turned completely golden, and he became completely golden in color from head to toe. Meanwhile, the Braja Gopis, they found Radharani. They discovered her on the banks. Then Radharani joined all the gopis, and they went searching for Sham. Everywhere they were searching, and they were also chanting, Sham, 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 where is Sham, where is Sham? They came to this Imlitala tree, and underneath the tree they saw this beautiful golden form lying there as if in unconscious, like a trance. Then they started speaking among themselves, the gopis. The gopis were, Radharani and Lalita Vishaka, they were discussing, is this Sham? In the middle of the night, there's no other men here. We were just with Shamsundar, but who is this golden form? How is it Sham? How did he become gold? All the gopis, they sat around Krishna. Well, they didn't know it was Krishna. And because somehow they thought they shouldn't go anywhere. They should just sit there. Because this golden person was deeply entranced, deeply asleep, and they didn't want to go anywhere. They were too curious to find out who is this person. So they continued chanting their japa. Sham, 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 sham. Slowly, the golden form, the golden person, opened his eyes. And the gopis, when Krishna looked all around and saw the Braja Gopis and Radharani looking at him with most amazed looks on their face, then Radharani said, Sham, is this you? What is this unique? If this is you, what is this unique form that you're showing us? Actually, in the upcoming Kali Yuga, I will assume my heart will fill with all the love and bhava emotions of your heart internally. And externally, my entire body will take on the kanti, the effulgence or brilliant golden color of your divine form. And when I assume your bhav and kanti, then I will be known as Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu Ki. And Krishna went on, when I, in the form of Gauranga, I will distribute Radha Govinda Braja Prem to one and all, everywhere. Gauranga Mahaprabhu Ki. This story comes from Varaha Samhita. So Shringar Vat, I pointed out to everyone also, that's also called Nityananda Vat. And there's a nice description about Nityananda, this is in Mathura Mandal Parikrama from Bhakti Ratnakara. Nityananda, at the age of 12 years old, one sannyasi came to Ekachakra. And you should think, actually, also, again, 12 years. This figure of 12, you keep your eyes open, you often see this number 12. 12 years is 12 years at the age of 12, or after performing austerities for 12 years, you'll see this, or 12,000 years. Like Jonah and Dara, 12,000 years, or 12,000 celestial years. But figure 12. Because in Jyotishi, some shastras, they say that every 12 years is like a yuga for the human being, for a human person, a human man, woman. So every 12 years we go through one millennium of our own existence. So, that's like from birth to 12, that's like one yuga. And then 12 to 24. And during those 12 years, there's usually transitions. When you're 12 years old going to 24, there's a transition, there's changes. And whenever you're coming to those different age points, you should expect some kind of opposition, conflict, re-examination, like when you're 12 years old. You know, boys find out about girls. Girls find out about boys. And then you can understand what trouble that is. And then at 24, there's another transition. And then 36 and 48. So if you're 46 and things are going a certain way, when you're 48, they may go in a different way. It's like this. Something to be a little aware of. Just like, for example, that's just every human being. But then in any particular circumstance, you take any middle portion of your life. Okay, I've been a brahmachari for 12 years. Then after 12 years, I think I should get married. You know, so this is, or you can even be a brahmachari for 24 years. I don't know why is it now 24 years? I think I should get married. Just that. So this kind of a testing period. Or I've been going on book distribution 12 years. I've been living in this temple for 12 years. I've been married. We got married 12 years ago. And then let's think about this marriage again. And where are we going? And are we going to do this for another yuga? We just finished 12 years as one yuga. And that yoga was really long, you know. So now we're going to go another yoga? I will try to, because we're devotees and we shouldn't break, but let's see. So these kind of, wherever, 12 years Sankirtan leader, 12 years Pujari, or 12 years in Moscow temple, and all of a sudden end up in Vrindavan, which is, that's not bad. But this thing can happen like this. So Nityananda, one sannyasi came to Ekachakra, and he begged Hadai Pandit, please give me your 12-year-old son to serve me as I travel the length and breadth of India on Parikrama. So Nityananda was biding his time, traveling around India with a sannyasi, waiting for Lord Chaitanya to manifest his Sankirtan Leela, which began at the age of about 20 years old for Lord Chaitanya. He was initiated by Ishwarapuri. He was about 20 years old. Nityananda Prabhu was about 15 years older than Lord Chaitanya, and he also toured Vrindavan. So when he came to Vrindavan, he particularly liked this place of Shringharbhat, and there's nice banyan tree. So when he came here in Braj, when he returned to Braj, he entered into Braj Bhav, and he behaved, as also he did in Shivasangam, he started behaving like a child. Of course, that was later, Shivasangam. But here, he was behaving like in the mood of a child, and he was even playing with some of the village children, and very much in like Balya Bhav, in the mood of like a playful young coward boy. If anyone saw Lord Nityananda wandering around in Braj Mandal, they thought that he was a personification of sweetness. And as soon as someone saw him or met him, they didn't want to leave him. They wherever he went, it was like a whole, the Pied Piper. Everybody following him wherever he went, they just didn't want to leave his company. He was personification of sweetness. As we went yesterday to Nandagram to see Nanda Baba's bhavan, or house, Nityananda also went up there and he saw Nanda Bhavan's place, or whatever it was there that he saw. Lord Chaitanya found the deities in a cave, but when Nityananda came, it says in this book that he saw the house of Nanda Baba. And when he saw the house of Nanda Baba, and I assume the deities, because they were already there also, then he started remembering his pastimes as Nanda Baba's son, Krishna's brother, Dao. And he started crying and crying, and feeling so much separation from those Braj Leelas. Just by what everyone's been looking at, I didn't really realize the view here. But this is Keshigat. All these different kings from Bharatpur, one after the other, They came at different times and built palaces on the banks of the Yamuna, right next to each other. They're contiguous, different Bharatpur kings from Rajasthan, because they wanted to be at this place of Keshigat. So Nityananda came to this place, Nityananda Vat, and he would sit under this beautiful tree, and then he would roll in the dust. And sometimes he would go into the kunjas and collect flowers, and he would decorate himself with different flowers, as he often did when he was playing with Krishna. And he started crying out, "Where is my Kanaya? Where is the Lord of my life?" And he was filled with these ecstatic feelings, and Nityananda would tremble, and tears would flow from his lotus eyes. And as he was relishing these Braj Leelas, he was waiting to hear the news or get some impression about Lord Chaitanya's activities. So he could understand within his heart, because he is the super soul, one expansion of Nityananda or Balaram, of course, is Kiradakshaya Vishnu. So he understood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was now enacting a Sankirtan Leela. So his feeling great ecstasy over that, the Nityananda, he ran, practically ran like a maddened lion. He ran from Nityananda, he left, this is the place where he left to go to Navadvip. He left from Nityananda Vat, and he ran practically all the way to Mayapur, and he hid himself in the house of Nandanacharya, which you must have heard in Mayapur, Leela, Nandanacharya Bhavan. Since we've been looking at Keshigat the whole time, and our Prakma didn't go that far before we boarded the boats, because after the Jaru Mandal, then there's Chirgat, where there's also another Chirgat by Nandagat, about 1 hour up the Yamuna, where Krishna actually performed the Gopi Vastraharana Leela, stealing the gopis' clothes, the young unmarried gopis. But here, at this Chirgat, there's some clothes hanging in the tree, and they put a murti there every day to bring out, put a murti of Krishna. After the Ras Leela with the married gopis, Krishna came, and they were bathing in the Yamuna, because Rasastali is right here. They were fatigued, they came to bathe in the Yamuna, and they left all their clothes, the gopis left their clothes on the bank. So then Krishna secretly dove under the water, came up in the bank, and he snatched all their clothes and ran up in the tree. So chir means he stole their clothes of the gopis here also, in two different places. So this, back up a little bit to Sringarvat. This Sringar, of course, means decoration, ornaments, necklaces, and garlands. Once during the Rasa dance, it's explained that Radharani was a little bit, what we say, miffed. She's a little unhappy to see so many newcomer gopis. There were so many sadhana siddha gopis, the Dandakaranya sages, and the munis and rishis, Shrutacharis. Different great personalities had attained gopi roop. In fact, in Garga Samhita, it explains there are 20 different female personalities from different yugas, from Satyuga, from Tretayuga, Dwapara Yuga, which came, or not Dwapara, Satyuga and Tretayuga, which came, took birth, these ladies, they took birth in Vrindavan, in Gopi Roop, and they came into the Rasa dance because they attained perfection in their sadhana, in their bhakti. So Radharani was seeing all these different, who are they? I don't, what do they look like? They're from Russia or something. Actually, Radharani was a little angry and in a sulking mood of what they call man, type of separation. Radharani ran over here to Sringarvat, and she sat under this banyan tree, sulking, and she was greatly distressed. So Krishna was searching here and there, looking for Radharani, and he found her under the banyan tree. So she was absorbed in her own internal bhavas. So Krishna came up behind Radharani, and he just kneeled behind her, because she was, and just started very gently, very, very gently, brushing it, Radharani's hair. And when Krishna was brushing Radharani's hair, he was thinking and feeling and acting with those acting on the basis of those feelings, that each strand, which means each piece, strand, each piece, each strand of Radharani's hair, this long black hair that goes all the way down her back, comes down here, comes down to her thigh, and it goes to about this far. That's how long her hair is, from here to here, middle of her thigh. Each strand of Radharani's hair is more dear to me than millions of my own lives. So very carefully, he's brushing. After brushing Radharani's hair very neatly and nicely. Then Krishna quietly, without disturbing Radharani, he walked away and he started picking flowers. Like Bela, he's picking Bela, Juhi, very small and fragrant white flowers. And he brought those back and he started, made little garlands, and like Bakul flowers, Bakul. He started weaving garlands in Radharani's, in her bani, in her hair, to make it very beautiful and very fragrant. Actually, when Krishna was carefully brushing Radharani's hair, she became aware that Krishna was brushing her hair, and she was just sitting like this, and Krishna noticed that the hair, the spine hairs on Radharani's arm, they were all standing on end. And then Krishna leaned over, because he could see, it was in the back, he could see. He said, "Oh, Radharani, am I hurting you?" Because sometimes if someone brushes your hair, they pull it. We don't have any, but... You know, they brush your hair, and then it gets snagged. We say snagged, and then it pulls. Ow, slow down. So, "Oh, am I hurting you?" And Radharani said, no, it's okay, you're doing, it's very nice. It's okay. Actually, Srimati Radharani was feeling most ecstatic in her heart to know that her beloved was doing such humble service, brushing her hair. But Krishna was in a dilemma, and also Radharani was in a dilemma, because when he was brushing Radharani's hair, then he couldn't see, because he couldn't see her face. So if he would lean over like this and look at her face to see whether she was happy or sad, or whether her hair was getting pulled or feeling any pain, then he couldn't brush her hair. So his service would be broken, because you can't look like this and brush the hair at the same time. So he was feeling some distress that I can't understand the movements of Radharani's heart, because I can't see her eyes or her face, because the heart is expressed through the face. So he felt some disturbance, so it's a dilemma. And then Radharani, she also felt disturbance, because she's thinking, what does my Shyam, how is he feeling when he's serving me? What does it feel like to be Krishna and brush my hair and serve me like this? And what expressions is he making? What are his eyes saying? What is the glow on his face? What is it saying? I wish I could see. So there were some mandris there that had come with Radharani to serve her and assist her. And they noticed that they could understand the movement of the pastime, because the mandris were expert, because they know the feelings and heart of Krishna, and they know the feelings and heart of Radha. So that's why they act as go-betweens or messengers, and they bring the divine couple together. Many services they do. So one clever mandri, she said, actually, a mirror is required. So she immediately got a darpan, a mirror, and she held it in the mirror. She held a mirror in front of Radharani's face. But the response of Radharani and Krishna to the presence of the mirror was most unique. Generally, when someone looks in the mirror, they look at themselves in the mirror. But when the mirror was held in front of Radharani, Radharani said, "Oh, how wonderful. Now I can see Shyam." So she was looking in the mirror at the and seeing Krishna's face from behind her being reflected in the mirror. And with the aid of that mirror, then Radharani could see what Krishna's heart was speaking and what his eyes were speaking. So she was looking at Krishna in her mirror, and then Krishna, his desire to understand the movements of Radharani's heart through her face, he was looking at the mirror also, but not at himself, but he's looking at Radharani's reflection. So Radharani's looking in the mirror at Krishna, and Krishna's looking at the mirror at Radha. Shringa Rasaraj Sri Krishna Ki
Jai.
Srimati Radharani Ki
Jai.
So we would encourage and everyone to find the time to please visit Sringharvat. There are two deities there of Gornitai, and that's the main temple. It may be closed when you go there, maybe afterwards, but if the temple is open, which we hope it is, then there's the Shringar Lila temple, which is usually always open. And then you go in the entrance to the temple, the Sringharvat, The actual deities are to the left, facing north. And you go across the temple courtyard, and there's a little, some steps going up, and there's a small temple there. And inside you'll see a painting, which is probably in your Vrindavan book or something. There's a painting there of Radharani like this, and Krishna's brushing her hair. It's a very old painting and very beautiful. Maybe you've seen in some Vrindavan book. But you can go there, and then in that place, you'll do parikrama of that painting, commemorating this Leela. When you go in the back, you'll see what appears to be like a sandbox. Like little kids, you know, they make a little box with sand, and the kids play in the sandbox. You know, like nursery school. So there's a sandbox there, but it's a transcendental sandbox. Because that is the same sand that preserved it there in the box. That is the same sand where Krishna sat behind Radharani and brushed her hair. So it's very special, Chintamani, Braja Raj. When we hear pastimes like this of Radha and Krishna's wonderful leelas, we appreciate the Lord that we're worshipping. Such a caring Lord we have. He's so caring and so loving and so kind and considerate that he wants, at every moment, he's trying to please and satisfy his devotees. Every leela of Gauranga and Radha and Krishna, Radha Govinda, they are certainly suitable to be meditated on, especially when we're chanting japa. Because we came here, we came to this place, and we heard about Sringarbhat, and hopefully you'll go there. It's on the way back. It's a 10-minute walk from here, 5-minute walk. Once we cross, it's 5 minutes. And go there and have darshan of that holy place, and the original banyan tree is still there, but now it's in a petrified form. I mean, it left. There isn't a baby there, but the original one is there, all the dry wood or whatever. And when we chant japa, we go there, we heard, we visited, we rolled in the dust, we prayed, we cried, we begged, and we ate that sacred sand, we ate some of that sacred Braja Raj, and we prayed for these leelas to manifest in our heart and for this mercy to come in our heart. So that we do while we're here. We hear the Harikatha, we visit the place, we pray, all these things I said. But when we leave from here, or even while we're here, it's even better, because we get 1,000 times the benefit of activities, good activities we do here. We sit this afternoon or tomorrow, we chant japa, we think, all right, yesterday, and this is called mind exercise. And we have opportunity every moment to exercise our mind. So we're sitting at chant japa. Oh, yesterday we went on parikrama, and we walked here and there, and we saw this place and that place, and then we heard these descriptions, and I went there also, and I saw. And now I'm chanting japa. What? Okay, Sringarbhat, what happened there? Oh, it was Rasalila and Radharani. And then you just try to recount while you're chanting very attentively, very clearly the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And then your eyes are closed, and you try to fix the form of Radha and Krishna in your mind, and then you think, okay, Sringarbhat, there's this banyan tree, the Jamuna's going by, there's so many flowers, there's lotus, there's creepers, there's birds in the trees, beautiful breezes blowing, carrying fragrance, all from lotuses in the Jamuna. And I'm all so many Sakis and Manjis are there. I'm there. I have a chamara, or whatever, some service paraphernalia. And then then you recount everything you heard, and you see what kind of japa you have, what kind of japa you have, what kind of experience. But if you don't try to become absorbed, you will never become absorbed. Sringarbhat ki jai. Because most of you, or many of you, I suppose, or I would hope so, had the great fortune of visiting Navadvip Dham, and possibly, and also hopefully, attending the Brikama and hearing all about Gaur Leela. So when we get the mercy and blessings of Gauranga, then we come to Vrindavan, and by the blessings of Nitya and Gaur, then we can enter slowly, from a distance, we can enter the pastimes of Radha and Krishna as faithful hearers, faithful listeners. We'll conclude today's Yatra with some description about this Keshigat, which is right here behind us. The kings of Bharatpur paid a lot of attention to this place more than any other, well, they paid attention to a lot of places, but especially you see there's about seven or eight palaces in a row. So seven or eight different kings appreciated how significant and important is this Lila Stali of Keshigat, so they put a lot of effort into building their houses and temporary residences here. Because the kings are also aware that they want to get the best for their money, so to speak. Because to live here on the banks of Keshigat and to bathe in the Jamuna at Keshigat is extremely purifying, and one accumulates and collects tremendous amount of sukriti and piety and religious merit. It is told in the Adi Varaha Puran that anyone who bathes in Keshigat gets the benefit of bathing in all the holy places. So, of course, Keshigat is there, but there's two sides to every ghat. So this is also Keshigat. This is right. It's all the Jamunas here. The Leela happened here. So the Adi Varaha Purana says that a bath in Keshigat is 100 times more purifying than a Ganga bath. Raghunath Das Goswami prays in Brajvilas Stav 85. I worship Keshigat, where Krishna washed the blood from his hands after he killed the horse demon. This is the prayer of Raghunath. He washed the blood from his hands after he killed the horse demon Keshi, whose loud whinnying means that crying they do. Horse, oh. His loud crying caused the three worlds to tremble, and whose blazing red eyes burned the universe like blades of grass. The anartha, the unwanted thing, the impediment, the obstacle, the anartha represented by Keshi, is the vanity and the pride of thinking, I am a great sannyasi, I am a great devotee, I am a great acharya. The illusion of thinking that one is a great devotee, or thinking that one is a guru, produces intense pride and the tendency to lord offensively over others. This illusion must be carefully given up. The killing of Keshi destroys the pride caused by wealth and worldly attachment. The horse demon personifies the sadhaka's conception, I mean, say, practitioner, devotee like us, personifies or represents the sadhaka's conception of being more expert than others. When such a devotee enters Braj, like Keshi, he creates a big disturbance by proclaiming his superiority. Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends that even if a Vaishnava is expert in devotional service, he must always remain humble. So now we'll conclude with one pastime. One day, Krishna and Balaram, Subal, Sridham, and Madhumangal brought all the cows on this side. Cows drank the Yamuna water, then they bathed in Yamuna. They're relaxing under all these banyan trees here. Then Madhumangal, he said, Sham, I'll tell you what. Why don't you let me wear your turban today, and I'll wear your peacock feather. Let me wear your yellow dhoti, and I'll take your flute. Then, what will happen then? Now that I'm dressed like you, then all the Brajagopis and all the Brajagopas, they will love me and they will feed me lots and lots of ladus. And Krishna smiled. And then he dressed Madhumangal up to look exactly like himself. Madhumangal began strutting about here and there proudly. Meanwhile, in Mathura, Kamsa met with Mr. Keshi. Of course, Keshi means hair. He's a hairy horse. He wasn't a hairy Krishna. He was a hairy horse. So he said, listen, Keshi, I've sent 19 of my friends to Vrindavan, and none of them have returned. All these 19 superhero friends of mine are MIA, missing in action. Because that little blue rascal killed them all. So Kamsa decided to save the best for last. Because Keshi was the biggest, baddest demon he had in his bag of tricks. Keshi used to eat about 50 human beings a day. He didn't eat grass. He didn't eat hay. He ate you. He was a Rakshasa horse. And yet he was harassing Parjanya, the great-grandfather of Krishna, in Nandagram, and caused everyone to leave to go to Gokul. So Kamsa met with him and he said, "Listen, Keshi, I'm counting on you. I know that you won't let me down. You've never failed in your mission before. I want you to go to Braj Mandal and terrorize everyone. And especially I want you to find this one rascal and kill him." So Keshi said, "All right. Can you please describe what he looks like?" "Well, he wears a white turban. He has a peacock feather. He has a yellow chudder around his neck. And he's a yellow silk dhoti. He keeps a flute in the side. That's the guy. I want you to just put him in your mouth and chop him up in the chutney. And then spit him in the Yamuna." So he said, "All right, I'll do it." So it just so happens, as Madhu Mangal was strolling about very proudly in the disguise of Krishna, he was wearing a white turban with a peacock feather. And he had a yellow dhoti and a yellow chudder and a flute tucked in his dhoti. Keshi trumped into Vrindavan, and the Keshi demon came here, and he saw these cowboys. "Hey, there he is! There's Krishna! There's that rascal I'm supposed to kill!" And he started attacking at full speed, and he ran up in front of him, and he turned around with his legs. Boom! Smacked him in the side of the head. Actually, when Keshi turned around and kicked, just the wind blowing going from his feet made Madhu Mangal fall unconscious. Seeing his friend unconscious in distress, Krishna revived him and immediately attacked the Keshi demon. I can read that in the Krishna book. Krishna caught that demon by his back legs, and he whirled him around and threw him 100 meters. He came back. He threw him again. And finally he went, put his left hand in his mouth and gave him a crown. No, knocked all his teeth out. Krishna's left arm and his mouth felt like a hot iron rod. Immediately all his teeth fell out, and Krishna started inflating his arm, so his arm expanded. Then the demon's eyes popped out. Boop! And he passed and urine, and he went home to hell. Back to hell. Oh, it says in Garga's Meter, it says that he choked and he was sweating, and then he blew up like an overripe watermelon. Of course, you live in Russia, you don't know what an overripe watermelon does when it blows up. But in Gargan's Amita, it sounds like this, the analogy. So if you have a watermelon, which they grow right here in the summertime in the banks of Yamuna, and you just let it stay there in the sun, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and finally the water inside gets so hot from the summer sun that it blows up. And the watermelon goes like that. It goes. So the horse, you know, Krishna was blowing him up, and finally he went. All the gooky, ooky, stinky red stuff and everything inside just came blip inside out, flip side up. So after Krishna killed the Keshi demon, Madhu felt very embarrassed, and he returned Krishna's dhoti and his peacock feather and his flute, and he said, "Listen, I don't ever want to dress up like you again. I forget about the ladus. I don't want any ladus. My life is worth lakhs and lakhs of ladus. Take your peacock feather, take your turban, forget it." So that's it. Hare Krishna. But one last point is that Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar Devotion, which most of us have read, I hope, he describes in Sanskrit, it's also in Padyavali by Rupa Goswami, but he describes this very same place, Keshigat. He said, if you want to maintain your attachment to society, friendship, and love, then don't go to Keshigat and see that beautiful boy standing under the Kadamba tree under the full moon night of the Sharad season playing on his murli. Don't go there. I'm warning you. Don't go there if you want to maintain attachment to husband, wife, family, society, all these things. Because if you go there and see him, then Bulgaya. Patni, Pati, Parivar, Sab, PPP. PPP Bogaya. P Patni P Pati P Parivar. Right? Means husband, wife, and family. But if you go there, you'll forget husband, wife, and family, and Ruski land, and America, and any kind of France land, and any other land. And you'll just run after that boy forever. We should tell some boat pastime. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Premamrita, one small book he wrote, Premamrita, and Gopal Champu by Srila Jiva Goswami, and many, many different books. There's this boating leela described. These boating leelas take place on the Yamuna, and also especially at Manasi Ganga in Govardhan. Of course, the present-day Yamuna is extremely diminutive, very small, tiny. I can remember in 1987, maybe 1988, because we've been here continuously since 87, the Yamuna came all the way up to the ISKCON Goshala. It was about, at Kaliya Ghat itself, there was about 3 feet of water. Now, a little less water, and it's only in 20 years. So now, thinking of that, now imagine what it was like 5,000 years ago. And I've seen in the rainy season, like you see, look out there, see those high banks, high sandbanks? Like from the Yamuna, that's about 10 or 15 feet above, that level is about 15, the Yamuna is about 15 feet below that bank, right? I've seen many times during the rainy season where the Yamuna is way over that bank and all the way over there about 2 kilometers. Real time, eyewitness. So the Yamuna is very, very vast. So when they're having a boat pastime, it's significant. Crossing the Yamuna is like crossing the ocean practically. It's huge. And Manasi Ganga was miles, like 20 miles long or whatever. So huge. Because Govardhan was so big. So the general pastime, this particular pastime, these different boating leelas, Krishna always dresses up as a boatman. And he gives himself a name like Prem or Balaram or Giridhari or... He's just a boatman. Boatman, what's your name? Ah, it's Giridhari, Shamlal. Oh, that reminds me, my Krishna's name is Shamlal. So he wears a red checkered gumsha. Where is it? This is a nice boatman's gumsha. He wears a gumsha like this, right? One around his waist. It's like a little drama, Not too good at that. Then a flute is hiding down here in his gumsha, right? Krishna, he disguised himself as a boatman. And then... he has this old boat, and then he meets the gopis, and they have different funny conversations. And then, so this is one example here. This is small. It's a very small one. The gopis came here to the bank of the Yamuna, and they wanted to cross to the other side. And they were carrying some butter and yogurt and ghee to go to the other side of the Yamuna, because there was some yagya there, Bhaguri Rishi or Shandili Muni. They were doing big yagya. So they were bringing all these yogurt for the yagya. Krishna's completely disguised as a boatman. He looks like some American. But he wanted some very unusual. He didn't want any taka. He didn't want any paisa. He said, "Listen, if you want to board my boat, then I have to wash the feet of one of you gopis. Unless you let me wash the feet of one of the gopis, I will not take you across the Yamuna." And Lita Sakhi said, "Which gopi?" Then the boatman said, "Radha." And Lita said, "No, you filthy boatman. No way." She refused. So then Krishna said, "Then swim, because I will not take you one inch in my boat." Seeing no other alternative, the boat, because there was only one boat, by the way, somehow or other, on that particular day, there was only one boat and one boatman. The gopis relented, and then they let Krishna wash Radharani's feet. Radharani Charan Seva Ki. This is how the Gaudiyas like to see Krishna. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas like to see Krishna serving Radharani. Dehi Parapalavam Udaram Matapam. Jayadev Goswami says, Krishna approaches Radharani in the Kunj and says, "Oh Radharani, oh Radhika, Dehi, please give me your soft palava, your soft bud-like feet. Please give me your soft bud-like feet and let me hold them as an ornament on my forehead. Please, I'm begging you, will you please give me this favor?" This was told 1,200 years ago by Jayadev Goswami in Gita Govinda. So then Krishna, after the boatman bathed Radharani's feet, then he took that Radhacharanamrita, then he sprinkled it on his head, and he sprinkled it on his boat, then he sprinkled it on the Yamuna. So obviously, anyone who received that Charanamrita became ecstatic. The Yamuna became ecstatic and started expressing her ecstasy by the blossoming of lotus flowers on her surface. Krishna became ecstatic by his hair was standing on end. The boat became ecstatic by going rocking back and forth. Then Krishna said, "Yes, please board my boat." Lalita was doubtful. She said, "Radharani, all right, we met the conditions, but did you see his boat?" This boat is 3,000 years old. The wood is all rotten. And did you see the boatman? He's so skinny. And look at the way he wears his turban. He doesn't know how to tie a turban. Did you ever see anybody wear a turban like that? Obviously, the guy can't even figure out how to tie a turban, so how's he supposed to take the boat across? All right, Lalit, everything you said is true. I also have my doubts whether this boatman knows anything about boating. Already we can understand that he's a strange guy. Have you ever gone to a boatman and he asked to bathe your feet? Lalita said, yeah, but all right, we'll just say our prayers. Namaste Narasringhaya Prahlada Lada Dayane Hiranyakashipurvakshaha Shilatanka Nakalaye Ito Nishingho Parato Nishingho Yato Yato Yamitato Nishingho Bahir Nishingho Ridaye Nishingho Nishinghamadim Sharanam Prapade Tavakara Kamalavare Nakam Adbhuta Sringham Dalita Hiranyakashipu Tano Bringham Keshavadrita Narahari Rupa Jai Jagadisha Hare Jai Jagadisha Hare Jai Jagadisha Hare Jaya Nishringha Dev Jaya Nishringha Dev Jaya Nishringha Dev Jaya Nishringha Dev So the gopis prayed to Nisringadev, and then some of the gopis went like this. Then they boarded the boat. So Krishna started pushing the boat, going across the river. Oh, and they got in the middle of the river. Krishna said, oh, you know, all you gopis, you know, I mean, you're so kind of like, you know, kind of heavy, and the boat, you know, usually I just carry a few kids across the river and it doesn't weigh much, but, you know, you're a little heavy on the bottom, and I'm having trouble, and my arms are so tired. I feel like I'm a little hungry. Do you think I can have a little yogurt from your pot? From your pots? You're carrying this yogurt to this yajna. Can I eat some little bit of yogurt and butter from your pots? So the gopi said, all right, already. So take some yogurt. So then Krishna ate, and he ate, and he ate, and he became so bloated. He said, oh my God, unbelievable. I'm tired, I'm going to sleep. So Radharani asked one gopi, she said, can you check on this so-called boatman and find out what's wrong? Because now this boatman's lying on the floor of the boat, and he's completely bloated. So then, so he's sleeping, and when you sleep, you know what you do. So Krishna's snoring away, deep, deep in sleep. I mean, you can imagine if you eat 3 kilos of butter and 5 kilos of yogurt. Anand, samadhi. So then Radharani said, Gopi, go check. Maybe he's unconscious. Maybe he had a heart attack or something. Because he was really working hard. He was perspiring, you know, and he was trembling a little bit. Why was he perspiring? Why was he trembling? If you were a man and you were in a boat with 10 ladies, you would perspire also. And you probably start trembling also. So Krishna, he's Purushottam. You're Purusha. You're a person. And he's Purushottam. Uttam, Uttam, Uttam. Supreme personality of Godhead. But he's not trembling now. He's snoring. So the gopi says, okay, let me check. No fever is there. Oh, heart's working. Maybe he has appendicitis or something. So the gopi is going like this. Then she says, hey, what is this thing? Hey, what the hell is this? Radharani, look at that. Does that look familiar? Acha? Sucky, give me that thing. Oh, now we got you. This little flute causes us so much trouble. Suckies, what should we do with this flute? We should break it. Throw it in the Amona and send it off to Matura. But before we do that, we'll do that. But we're going to use this flute to wake up this boatman. Bonk! Huh? Radhe, 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 Jai, 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 Shri Radhe. Radhe, 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 Jai, 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 Shri Radhe. Radhe, 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 Radhe. Radhe, 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 Radhe. Radhe, Radhe, Govinda, Govinda, Radhe. Radhe, Radhe, Govinda, Govinda, Radhe. Radhe, Radhe, Govinda, Govinda, Radhe. Radhe, 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 Jai Shri Radhe. Krishna, Krishna, Jai Shri Krishna. Radhe, 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 Radhe. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Radhe, 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 Radhe. Radhe, 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 Radhe. Vrindavan Bihari Lal ki jai, Giriraj Dharan ki jai, Shyam Sundar ki jai, Jumana Maharani ki jai, Keshigata ki jai, Emaligat ki jai, Madan Mohan ki jai, Kaliradha ki jai, Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Righty, righty.